Hey listeners, this is Travis Book, bassist and singer in the bluegrass band The Infamous String Dusters. I started the Travis Book Happy Hour to try to get to the root of what makes my contemporaries tick, what inspires and motivates them, and why they make music. It's an hour where we get to play together, talk about life, and do it all in front of a live studio audience. If you haven't listened yet, maybe check out some of my highlights, including Sierra Hull, Beppe Gambetta, Tim O'Brien, and Lindsay Liu. You can find every episode of the Travis Book Happy Hour on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network or wherever you get podcasts.
Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians. I'm Cindy House, and I am the host. Thanks for joining us. The tallest man on earth is our guest today. Christian Mattsson is his name, and he grew up in the Swedish countryside and came to be the tallest man on earth in the country's diverse and low-key music scene. He often speaks of his weird little brain and wild imagination, which actually stems from a heap of anxiety that he lives with every day. Growing up, he struggled to tamp down his high energy, especially in a culture that encouraged everyone to not stand out or draw attention to themselves. When he discovered the guitar, it felt like he found a vessel to harness all his energy, creativity, and imagination. As a teenager, he found solace in the music of Bob Dylan, which led him to discovering other American folk artists like Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger. His world opened up when he found guitarists that use open tunings like Skip James and Nick Drake. His new album, Henry Street, was written and created in the aftermath of the pandemic. Christian struggled with writing in forced solitude and found himself focusing too much on darkness. His inspiration returned when he finally got back on tour, where he began writing nonstop due to being back in motion and around other people. Human Connection fueled the new album, which was produced by Nick Sanborn of Sylvan Esso in North Carolina. The two musicians' similarities create a beautiful chemistry on the new record, which is the first complete band album recorded by Tallest Man on Earth. Let's take a listen to a song from the new record. This is Every Little Heart, and then we'll get to our conversation with Christian Mattsson, the tallest man on earth, on Basic Folk.
But you still don't think it's where I end and he begins. I'm gonna breathe and work for every little heart I know. I'm gonna breathe and work for every little heart I know. And we leash up the darkness of time wherever we go. Can I come to your room? Let's leave it alone.
All right, Christian, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's a real pleasure.
Well, thank you for having me, Cindy.
You grew up in the Swedish countryside, and do you still have a house there now?
Yes. Yes, I bought a house there like 30 minutes from where I grew up. More than 10 years ago, so I've had it since.
Sweet. So of that place, you say, it's where I will end my days. To me, it's the prettiest place in the world. It's rural. There's a lot of small villages and all the forests and all the rolling hills. I have a house with a river on one side and a mountain on the other. It's a pretty great, if you like nature. It sounds like very idyllic. But how do you think the countryside where you grew up has impacted who you are? And why have you remained in that area?
When did I say that? I mean, I say so many things over the years, no, but it's true. you know what? How it is, you know, on your question, well, it did, I mean, it is informing me in many ways, you know, and how I still that type of landscape is something that will always be, you know, my body of resonance, and like that will, what I, you know, I keep on referring to in songs, and place that I tend to go back to, and I now live there. But a big part of it is that I wanted to get out of there, you know, that I, you know, growing up somewhere, and then, you know, seeing that there's a whole world out there, and so many, you know, inspiring things that are not close to you. Like I was, you know, consuming culture from all around the world, and growing up in a place where I grew up in a sports town, did all the sports, and just came to a point when, like, I think it was most prolific was David Bowie that saved me from sports, of just wanting to be, I wanted to be in a glam rock band. I just stopped all that. I rolled out of sports from, like, then I went into skateboarding and snowboarding, and I was competing in snowboarding, and that, you know, is a more creative world. But then there was, like, nothing else to do. But then I fell into music, and then, you know, there's not a lot of people to play with, and you couldn't for the life find a banjo. So I had to, like, build one. And so, and also, I don't know how to explain it, but
you built a banjo?
Yeah, but, like, I built something that functioned as a banjo. It was more like a resonator guitar but, like, as a five-string banjo. So that's what I learned how to play clawhammer on, because, you know, I would go to the public library. I loved the library, but you could borrow CDs. And you could borrow, like, 10 CDs at a time. And I would just borrow CDs from the cover, like, if the cover looks cool or if something was interesting, I would go home and pop them into the player. And it's like, oh, wow. There's, like, and it was all for, like, it was like Emmylou Harris and My Bloody Valentine and Rykooter and Kraftwerk and that. And just like this whole world opened up to me. But then also growing up in Sweden, and I don't want to, Sweden is an amazing place to live. And, like, we have such a safety net, and we get to take, there's so many great things about it. And, like, that has, you know, made me who I am, that we got to take individual music classes and, like, instrument classes in school and stuff like that, that people around the world don't have the, you know, they're not given. I had that. But then we also have this thing that in our psyche that we're not supposed to be people that you don't stand, like, don't stand out. Like, don't be, don't, everything is showing off.
That sounds like American Midwest sensibility.
And where do you think they come from?
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. So where did you grow up?
The East Coast.
Okay. So that's where I went. Like when I started touring in America in 2008, it's just like I've been consuming American culture for so long, American music, and it's just it was very freeing to me to move. Like, I started to, like, be based in New York in 2015, and I lived there for 5 years, and I probably was around that time I was saying that I will always probably, you know, end my days, but I don't really care what end my days, they will end at one point where I am. But it was very liberating to me to not have that. If I wanted to be an expressive person and, let you know, do something, I mean, it's fashionable now to say that, you know, if you're on the spectrum, then, like, that's a superpower. No, it's not. We don't want to be in that. We want to be happy people. But, like, I made something out of my, you know, my hyperactivity, and I turned my anxiety into something I could, like, a positive force. But I needed to go somewhere else. This is a very long answer to your question, but, like, something that just, like, I couldn't stay there. Now I have the luxury to go to a lot of places. So now it's a wonderful place to live, because, like, now we're back to and go touring and so.
You mentioned you had anxiety, and I think I also have issues with anxiety, and I never thought about that when I was getting ready for this interview, reading about you and how you're a very energetic person and you have, like, a weird little brain and a wild imagination, that might be anxiety. But, you know, how did you identify your anxiety, and how do you see it, like, translating into your creativity and your energy?
I mean, I couldn't put a name to it then, but like when I was a, you know, to be, when I was a kid, you know, I mean, I've always been dabbling with music, but just in the beginning, I just didn't know it was music, but I could make noise on things. But when I was a kid, just, I didn't make a difference of playing in the woods. So just like I grew up next to the woods and I can be out like inventing my own little adventures and make believe in that. And I could also make believe, like just banging on the piano, that was, you know, to get something that will, you know, take a lifetime to figure out, but that energy in you when you have anxiety, that, you know, that energy that you, it could be so painful and hard to deal with, feels like now in hindsight, like, no, I was just channeling that into something, you know, because you want it out. You want it out of your body. You don't want it in there, that, you know, the thing in your chest. So through just playing games and playing music, it was the same. And that's what I've been doing my whole life. And it does, yeah, it feels like it's a great power source. And like, and for a lot of years, I was hard on myself, like just in regular life, that I couldn't, you know, that I couldn't finish anything from A to B, you know, that I mm-hmm. would, that I had like bad, like impulse control, or I couldn't focus on one thing, that I would just like, and like this, I was just seeing myself as an adult all of a sudden. I was like, I would just like be in my house and I would just like vacuum. I was just gonna vacuum. And I would walk past the piano. I was like, oh, I have an idea now. I would sit down by the piano and play, and like, of course, and then when I would be done with the piano, I would walk past the vacuum because I've forgotten about the vacuum. And I would just like, I was just like fixing a tape recorder or something and learning online how mm-hmm. to solder that. And I would just like, I would just feel like I was just tiring myself, that I was just like, why can't I just like be normal?
So it sounds like too much like multitasking.
Yes. But then I realized, like, wait a minute, I get a lot of stuff done. Just like, but it's not linear. Like if I just have to stop,
yeah, disjointed,
stop of chasing this like normalcy or whatever, then I could come to peace. And then of course, I mean, I had a lot of help with like meditation and searching and stuff like that. That has, you know, taught me to just be. Yeah, to live. I mean, it sounds like mindfulness bullshit. But it's kind of to try to live an unconditional life, because, you know, we talk a lot about like unconditional love, but then just have an unconditional life that, you know, I used to have this in my life. I would chase like, I need to have that kind of peace in me, and then I can start to live. Like I need to know where I'm most comfortable living, and I need to be in, you know, this and there in my career, I need this, and then, you know, happiness will come. But like, then you grow older, and a lot of, you know, you get served with, like, even like a, you know, I'm a white privileged man, that just like the society was designed for me. But, you know, this, you grow older, your parents get sick and things happen. So you always be served things that you have to deal with. So through that, I'm just feel like I am so grateful that I have music, because then I can always come back to that.
Yeah, it does sound like when you found the guitar, it was like finding a vessel to harness all of those attributes you were just speaking of, like songs for a space where you could be yourself, and you found like a sort of stillness playing music. And it sounds like when you picked up the guitar, you discovered peace. And it sounds like you're realizing that the lesson that everyone realizes is that you have to work at it. If you struggle with anxiety, or if you struggle with something through your whole life, it's not just going to go away. It's going to be with you. So you like live alongside it. But can you talk about what that piece first felt like, and how do you relate to it now when you play the guitar?
And like in the beginning, like I said, like in the beginning, I couldn't put words to it. I just knew, or I didn't understand it. It was always like shocking to myself, like in early days when I was like dabbling with music, and then just like really enjoying performing for other people, like live. And because I wasn't like the loudest person in the room, and I wasn't, you know, extroverted in in many other ways. I guess I am that now. Now I'm just yapping away all the time. But there was something that, like, I didn't understand that was the piece I found, just to be expressive through instruments. But I was just like, why am I doing, like, this is a crazy thing. Like, why am I getting in front of these? Like, that's hard. But I was doing that, and then I felt like I didn't really have a choice. I just, like, and now here I am. And in, like, how I think about it today is that I am just, that I am super grateful for it, especially after a couple of years. Like, there's a lot of things that we can talk about that happened in the last couple of years when all mm-hmm. of a sudden I couldn't do what I had based my whole adult life on. You know, the mm-hmm. traveling, seeing people, which allowed me to write songs about that, and then performing, which was like what I see is my main thing that I do, to put on a show. But today, it's the thing where, you know, how playing instruments, writing songs, it's you know, I have a lot of, like, feelings that, you know, that happen in my body, and thoughts about things that happen in life that I can't express in words. I can't express, and if I could express them in words, I would probably just not play music. But now I have this amazing thing that is music, so I can write a song, like Every Little Heart from the new album. I know exactly what it's about, because it's that. It's that, how it sounds, and what I'm saying, and that will, to me, relate to that feeling, but I can't put it in other words. That's why, like, I'm doing a lot of press and PR right now, and just like, could you just explain what this song is about? Like, well, I kind of already did by making the song, yeah. because that is my that's my closest guess what that feeling is about. So, but I have yeah. that beautiful thing in my life that I get to do that, and even like I get to make money from doing that. So it's wild.
Wow. It's kind of like you're inventing definitions of words, you know. Someone's like, "What does that word mean?" You're like, "What do you mean? What does it mean?" It just means, it means what it means.
Yeah, and like, thank God you can like almost dance to it, because like, what if you walk around the street and like to like try to express yourself like that abstract?
Yeah,
expecting someone to listen. Yeah.
So Bob Dylan is a name that gets thrown around in terms of comparison for you. Over the years, over the course of your career, you started listening to Bob when you were a teenager, which led you to finding other early American folk artists. Bob Dylan really seems like he was a bridge for you to discover your own personal musical taste and your own personal musical style. What was that discovery period like for you? And also, like, if you could expand and talk about how do you identify that sense of wonder and discovery in your life now?
I mean, to explain how that felt like, I mean, it was an amazing time of my life that it's, yes, everything is, can be was not as, you know, try to stay away from being bitter and cynical. I don't like that, but like we're more prone to it when we get older. Now we have to fight it more to get, like, that beautiful time when you're 14 and discover things and discover, like, wonder for real. It's like, and wonder, yes, I can find that in nature too, but like around those years, I remember I was skateboarding and I didn't really think about concepts or genres. I remember like two songs that were just like, because we listened to music and skateboarding, and it was, yes, Bob Dylan, Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, that would just, like, put my gaze up and, like, look at the horizon. Like, life is super cool, just, like, from what are these notes making me feel? And then also DJ Shadow, Building Steam from a Grain of Salt. That was another song that was just, like, when I was out skating. And those songs were just the same to me because they created the same, like, wonder, like, mm-hmm. wow. Super cool. I want to do, like, can I do something like this? And, you know, I would pick up the guitar and learn how to play Don't Think Twice, It's All Right. But to me, and I wasn't interested in, like, 60s, like, folk revival or, like, the revival that happened, like, in when I started with Tallest Man on Earth later, when it was just, like, when folk music was super popular and, you know, everyone, look, you know, you dressed up like a lumberjack. To me, it was all the same. What just, like, made me, like, I was wondering, and that's what I felt with Bob Dylan. Like, he was, like, the fearless person of that time, of just like, it was not just like, yes, there were some, you know, just straight up, you know, he had Woody Guthrie and could just channel things through that, like I did with Bob Dylan. Like, what is the song on my first album, Honey, Won't You Let Me In? That is the hour when the ship comes in. It's just the same words, same, it's just, I was just like, you know, when you, I found like, oh, could I be, I was just still searching, which I still am, but through Bob Dylan and what I was just, it was the wonderful time of the internet when it was still kind of cute. When there was just like all these like MP3 blogs and like weird like bootlegs and stuff, and you could listen to old shows of Bob, and through him I found so much music. Like I found like Roscoe Holcomb and like that guy, that sounds like he's coming from space, and Son House, that was Son House, of course, yes, but then who am I thinking of? Skip James, that just sounded to me, mm-hmm. it was just like super, like almost like futuristic and spacey through that. And then I got, of course, in love with the low fineness of the quality of those recordings. And when I went into just like recording my songs like that, it was not because of to try to emulate the 1920s. I thought it sounded cool. They just had the option of recording like that, but I could just like, there was something about the abstraction of that too, and it's just not totally, totally clear. It was a wonderful time. Sorry, this is me ranting. Wonderful time of just discovering things, and I feel that Bob Dylan just opened up a lot of doors to just like cool stuff, and not just something that was, you know, a lot of other things from the 60s folk was, it was just cute. And it's just like, it was there, and I didn't want to be that. I wanted to discover like the weird world, you know. And I still, you know, I still get that wonder today, and like, but these days it's just like it's a mix of new songs being released of others, and then there's just those like staples you have in your phone, like on the offline, saved from like for flights and stuff that you keep on listening to, that, you know.
Yeah, just in case a plane goes down, you gotta listen to your favorite song.
yeah. So, it is a the pandemic was a, you know, was a, on the positive sides, you know, this sounds, I mean, this is super selfish because it's a terrible time, but then it was very, I thought it sucked so much, and but like from some of the positive things, it was just like the reminders of what's important and you know, what to focus on. That is something that maybe would have taken a way longer time for me to realize.
You were talking about getting into Skip James, who's this like surreal blues player. So after you played in some punk bands, you started getting into acoustic guitar and listening to people like Skip James, and you got into Nick Drake's guitar playing, and you discovered different types of open tuning, which allowed you to like basically do it, like basically do what you wanted to do on the guitar. You said it suited my personality to do whatever. So how do you compare your guitar playing to your personality?
Well, I think is it a product of my personality, or is my, no, it's just, is, are they the same? No, it's just, I've always felt like I can, you know, how you solve problems, or like small, like the big problems are always hard, but like when you like, if you invent a way to fix your plumbing because it's broken, or, you know, how you have to be creative in personal relationships and love, how you, there are ways to just like, I wouldn't ever let like tradition of how to play the guitar, because I'm not really interested in like guitar music per se. It's just like that, or it's just like, well, I can retune it, and then it will just be like way easier to play up here, or it would just like be way easier to do that, or it can actually more like. Like with some of these open tunings, I realized like, because I was playing in rock bands, it was climbing around and running around. Like, well, I can do that if I don't have to like play these like wonky bar chords, which I'd done, which I'm happy for now. When I studied like jazz guitar and classic guitar, but like that's not like a lot of these open tunings are inventions, because then I can play things and it won't, you know, I can just hold on to the guitar and it's not that far away and I can run around at the same time. So I don't know. It's a great question. I wish I had a better answer for it, but it's, yeah, creative. It's creative problem solving. And that's a lot of my, I want to say that my life is in all aspects.
It's interesting to hear that you grew up in a culture that, people tried not to draw attention to themselves, because you are such a charismatic stage performer and you are like in your element on stage. You say, I feel like I'm going more out of character on stage, and that you can really like be yourself. And you say, for example, like, I have to go into character when I go into the supermarket. What has been your relationship to performing live? Like, when did you figure out that it makes you feel like yourself? And then how do you try to bring that feeling with you off stage to the grocery store?
Now, when you say, I do feel that I've dared more to step out of character in the grocery store. I actually, it's one of my flaws that will, you know, I love going to the grocery store, and it just became my friends during the pandemic, because I spent so much time alone. So I befriended the people like at the fish counter, and you know. But I had this thing. I was touring everywhere in the world, and I could just totally go for it. And I would come home to Sweden and get on stage, and I always felt like I have to like make excuses. Like, I'm sorry. I was just so apologetic in the banters in between the songs, and I had friends point that out to me. They're just like, why are you doing this?
What were you apologizing for?
I wouldn't like say a literal apology, but I would just like play down like the grand gestures on stage, and like being it's hard for me to explain.
Are you,
but
Christian, are you like an anxious chill person? Where you like like when you walk through life and you're like everything's fine, but like your brain is like on fire?
Yes, but I'm trying to become friends with that fire, or just like being like it's kind of cute. Like the same thing when you learn that you never really like, you can defeat anxiety, it will like not go away, but then you can become like, oh, you're here again, buddy. So I was like, okay, you're like that when you have a reaction in your body, and it's like, and you could, but you know, through, you know, meditation, whatever, like I learned to observe myself.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been meditating.
You observe myself, then you can just like, oh, you know, okay, oh, so, that's cute. Okay, that's fine. It's going to be. So, yes, they will always, I will also always have a close contact with that, what you call like that noise, because it's, I feel that's the noise I've been drawing from, you know, we're talking about the beginning of channeling that into do something positive instead. You can actually like, okay, buddy, like, I know you're running around in circles around me right now, but like, you can actually help me. We like jump into this banjo for a while, and then, you know, we can get lost in this moment in a good way. But I felt like there were so many things that happened during the pandemic, of realizing that like we can skip through the whole part where I just couldn't write music, and it was just depressing, and I stopped doing it. But then when I could, I had the ability, I got to zoom out and, you know, look what I've been doing my whole adult life, and like when it was taken away, and it was just like, oh my God, that is the best thing. Like the newfound gratitude for it, I don't think I've taken it for granted before, but maybe a little, you know. So when I started to get to do like tiny shows in the beginning, when we had restrictions, and I have like 50 people in Sweden, and I just loved it. And I come back to North Carolina and I record this album, and I realized like, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I don't really care if it's for 50 people or 10,000 people. And with that came, you know, a new freedom, a new confidence. So I do think now when I go to the grocery store, I am, you know, I'm more, and also like, this is also, I mean, I've been thinking a lot about like how amazing it is. I'm turning 40 in a couple of weeks. Like,
Congratulations.
Thank you. But like that like life around here was just designed for me. Just like a white man in this age. I'm not young anymore. I'm still young enough to be like have some sort of attraction on that side of just being like a little, and I'm still a little cool because I'm young, but I'm still old. So people will like listen to me more in a weird way. So it's just like, and it, of course, that is allowing me to be more of a freak in, you know, in the grocery store as well. And just, you know, be more straightforward with my, you know, what I want to joke about or how I address other people. And I'm more fearless these days, but I do things. I try to use that, you know, that given power to do good in this world and try to spread love and, you know, that we, you know, should take care of each other. But I am feeling, long answer to your question, I am feeling that I can more and more step out of my, step, just be.
You're a beautiful freak and you're embracing it.
Yeah, I'm a freak at least.
I have a question about rawness in lyrics, about your 2015 album Dark Bird Is Home. It was written around a pretty sad time for you, and you said some of these songs, when I recorded them, I had to change the lyrics. They were too personal. So on this podcast, we just had like a debate about lyrics versus melody. And in that debate, we were talking about rawness in lyrics. So, Christian, how do you feel about rawness in songs? And how do you know when your lyrics are too dark or too personal?
Oh, that's a good question. It's a tough question because since I'm very abstract in my songs anyway, and I'm the one that kind of know what they're about, I try to not overthink things, but I do feel I write a lot, and this happened a lot during the pandemic, when just like, this is just this dark and depressing shit. Like, who wants to hear this? I don't want to sing this. Like, this has no real, this is just, it's not open for interpretation. It's not useful for anyone. It's not useful for me, because like, even with mice, they need to be, or have, and for my whole career, I wish like, oh, one day I'm going to become this like storyteller that everyone is going to know exactly what this is about. But I'm kind of grateful that a lot of songs of mine are not, because then I can keep on playing them and they can have new meanings even for me, like some of the lines. So, but I mean, around that time, like, and I know you're supposed to be this like uncompromising artist that is just like, the art is most important thing, but it's not. Like on that album, I was like, I had just gone through a divorce with a person that is now one of my closest friends. It was a very beautiful divorce in that sense. But you can't just sing a thing and then you know that that person will understand it's like about them, just like so literal. And it is, if it's mean or sad or then you take it out of the song. Because like the song is not that important. It's like, it's not, or that line is not that important. So just like, you need to have to be a, yeah. And also like there in some songs I've definitely taken out lines where just like, that'll be like
take
hurtful
out,
for
take
that,
out but, your ex's phone number.
Yeah,
you're singing.
Yeah.
Oh, I should maybe take that out.
like that. And also take about my own phone number, you know, once in a while, where just like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to stay in that reaction to that, whatever happened. Like, that's just like, oh, let's move on, Christian. Stop, like, being that. So, rawness, I don't know where, what's the most, because I can tweak lyrics. I do that literally, a changed words when I play live sometimes, depending on how I feel about things. But then, you know, you can tweak it with, you know, how you deliver it. Like something could sound, and like a song like Love Is All that I've had played forever. It was on The Wild Hunt, I think. I can sing that in a pretty like nostalgic way, and just kind of like regretting sad. I can sing like, I can be pissed off singing that, and I could tweak. That's the beauty of music, I think. You can just change it, and you can, you know, push whatever button is working that day, you know.
Your new album, Henry Street, is an album that sees you exploring your own stubborn optimism and how to be a person in this world. How do you define stubborn optimism, and where has it appeared in your writing?
I feel like this album, for the first time, to me, feels like it's not just like, well, the other ones haven't been that as well, but like it's not totally autobiographical, and I can't speak English all of a sudden. I've let more things into this album, observing the world and observing the people around me and what we're doing together. Like, this is more about us as humans, how we're trying to be humans, not only how I'm trying to be human, but then you can, all of a sudden, it's something you can zoom in on how I'm dealing with it. But a lot of it is about, like, coming out of, yes, the pandemic, but there's so many injustices in the world, and, like, there, you know, we're doing terrible things as humans. We're like, we suck. Like, we're so, and then we can, if we become bitter and cynical, like, oh, we're humans. We, you know, we always tend to end up at this. But then we make, this is like what we were talking about. We make art. Like, how weird is that? We gather in rooms and just like feel like strengthened from hearing sad love songs. Like what I built my career on, just like having a pretty fucking good time with people singing breakup songs. We do that, and we're still curious, even like it's like with everything that's going on like all the time. But we're still curious, and we still fall in love, and we still laugh with friends. And it's like, what is that in us? Like, and what is that thing we're not focusing on, like that we actually have that. Because, you know, I've done that whole thing of like reading about all the, like, you know, you read the overstory and then you think about like trees and how mushroom fungi work together and how nature, and reading, what's his name, Kropotkin or whatever, way back, was talking about like how we misinterpreted that survival of the fittest, that we think we're the fittest because we're the strongest on this planet, but then you figure out like ants will survive us and stuff like that, becoming this like, oh, you humans suck. But we have this thing where we invent these beautiful things. So that is what, like, even like this album is about. Like in Henry Street, the title track is just like it's really sad, like looking at our strive to be a lot of us on this planet. We grow up in like capitalist societies where we were supposed to be, where the individual is the most important thing. Like, you are the most important. You should build your brand. You should stand out in front of others and be like really successful and shine. Like, it sounds weird coming from me that have success, but I have that, but I'm still going to talk about it. And with social media and all that, and then you see the sadness in people when it doesn't work. Because society don't really care about just you. So that was what Henry Street is about. So in that lyric, it's mostly about the observation about how hard it is to be a human and coming down almost to the point like, how am I ever going to be able to do this? I don't know if I can take this anymore. But then trying to illustrate it in Phil Cook's beautiful outro on the piano, that's just the daydream of like, wait a minute, that stubborn optimist, like maybe there's a way to dance out to like to a nicer field, like a beautiful, this is something we have ingrained in us as Swedes as well, that we go through the winters that are just like, it's just dark, there's no sun, and we've just had that back in Sweden, but then it's so easy to just like almost to give up on, you know, everything. But then spring comes and you just like, you forget about those things. And that's something I tried to, it's so abstract, but in that song, Henry Street, of just like, but
yeah,
it's not going to be February forever. And then, yeah, it's for the first time it feels like my first, like, it's my first grown-up album. I know that's a weird phrase, like, my grown-up album, and just, like, my first confident album. And then that has also confidence, and it's very abstract, and it's kind of all over the place in, like, how it sounds from song to song. But I do, to me, it makes sense, and it connects.
You were talking about earlier that you did not have an easy writing time in solitude, but your inspiration returned when you started to tour again, owing that creative surge to like being in motion. But it also seems to me like you're fueled by connections with other people. Yeah. How do human interactions impact you? You can talk about both positive and negative.
Well, I think they are mostly positive, because even if you like only consume other people, that's not good English. If you only meet other people through like the internet or TV, as what happened during the pandemic, it's very few nuances of a human being. But I would feel like when you get out in the world again, and even people you don't agree with, there is a nuance of just like, then you actually see in their eyes of just like, if it's someone you're not, or just some being, you know, it's really hard to not just write people off. But at least when you're in the same room as a person who is expressing like a terrible view on other people, and like, but you can see, then you see that there's some kind of weird fear in their eyes of not knowing what's going on, so he's grabbing for it. That's some ranting, but what is more, let's focus on the positive things. That yes, it's true. When I got out, not just touring, just being with people, like having dinners with friends, and like, you know, starting to go on dates, and then for me, that was me being like in life for real, and that is what is inspiring. Because then when you realize, well, okay, well, who am I in this world? Well, like, I'm a person who writes songs, and like, I didn't really get what my friend was saying to the other friend tonight, but like, oh, I could write a song about that. But just observing it through, and that, yes, I became bitter and cynical and depressed and all that, because when everything is just in the format of the internet, and then just me being mostly having real conversations with myself, it's just like that, and I have like four thoughts in my head that are bouncing around. And I wrote about them, and it's not interesting. It needs to be the thing where you just like that rooster in Robin Hood that just sings the songs around. You know, for the first time, I really felt like that. You're just a troubadour. You're just like the. And that is what I get to do, and that's what I want to be.
You recorded Henry Street in a band setting, which was the first time you've done that in the studio. So lots of human connections.
Yes.
How did those human connections and interactions make that process stand out to you?
Well, it was the first time I'd done it like that. I've had other players play on my albums before, and we've done more like overdubbing and trying to... Mm-hmm. This is the first time when we were playing together in the studio, and the first time when I had the confidence of doing that, from that new built confidence of just like, well, this is just what I'm going to do, and like, life's too short to not ask my talented friends, because like in the past, I think it was lack of confidence and a fear of showing like yourself as like a vulnerable, no good, of just like that, when you just have like a scrappy demo of a song, and just like figuring things out on an instrument, I always, you know, seen my friends around me that are super talented and great, like, oh, they know exactly what they're doing. Like, this is a cliche of, I don't feel like imposter syndrome, but that feel, it's easier to not like challenge your ego and just like, just do something that's safer. It's DIY was safer to do that by myself, and not just like coming into a studio and just like, you all of a sudden you can't play, or like people don't think your song is good enough. So it's just easier to do that. But now it's just like, God damn it, Christian, like, stop that. So I just invited those friends that I look up to so much, and I knew that I could deliver as well. So to just come into that setting, and there was so many, you know, elements, so many aspects why it was so great, because first of all, we had, like many of us had gone through, like it was hard mentally going through the pandemic and being isolated. So just that, just be in the room together and be able to just hang out and then also play music together. I think that, and also the openness of all, like I, of course I chose these people because not just how they play music, but because what, you know, what kind of people I've experienced, like the friendships I experienced. So, you know, there was so much joy. We were happy. We were dancing to songs, but also like being able to like to cry and to talk about other things than the actual music helped it, that got seeped into the music. And Anna Morris, who was running the hospitality of that studio, she was cooking these amazing like family dinners. And we took a break and like late afternoon and just sitting by a big table and just eating amazing food and just laughing and talking about other things than music. That just like got me and the other just like wanting to run out in the studio. Like, oh, now I'm going to try this. And like the things that maybe I hadn't thought about in the past, although that's the most important thing, to just like to be in the right, back to that thing, you know, when you're just a kid, you're just playing, you're just like having fun and forget about.
Nick Sanborn produced the record from Nick from Sylvan Esso.
Yes.
And you call this record your most playful. And to me, Nick seems like a really playful musician.
Yes.
With what he does with Sylvan Esso. And you can feel his influence and his energy on this record, which is like living alongside yours. It's like a really beautiful combination. Just the way the record sounds, especially the song Looking for Love. I can just imagine there's a lot of like laughing and palling around and tomfoolery in the studio. I'm just wondering like how you guys get any work done. Like, what is it like for the two of you to work together?
Well, that's how we work. That's how we get work done. Like, and and I, you know, I interpret Nick as being a lot like me, like personally, and how his, you know, creative problem solving and how he uses his energy. And, you know, I've known Nick since he played in the band Megaphone way back. And when his name came up as an idea of producing, it was like, it was clear because I just knew it was going to work, just like, because since I love him so much, I love him and his personality so much and how we are together. And like, and then with another musician like Phil Cook, who plays the piano on, who also played in Megaphone, who plays on, like when there was some time, it was just the three of us in the studio. And I feel, this is my interpretation, we are the same person that, you know, the person I was explaining before that just like is vacuuming and playing the piano and fixing a thing. But for the first time, it felt like being normal. Like, because the three of us are kind of the same, that type of energy. And then it's just super easy to get stuff done because then you will tomfool your day and like just and get things get things recorded. And I'm happy you mentioned Looking for Love, because me and Nick, we had 2 days in the studio, just him and I, before the other people joined, just so we could, you know, talk about like what we wanted to do. And it was him and I and Allie Rogers, who engineered her amazing spirit, is why this album sounds like it does as well. So we were just like the bass team, like the, we were talking about, and then all of a sudden, like, should we just try to record something? Like that, the weird thing when you just don't, it's just a white sheet of just like a white canvas. Should we just try to do something? Yeah, let's do Looking for Love. And we set up this thing where I played this rubber bridged guitar that, you know, it's like it's a weird type of setup on a guitar, and a lot of people play them now. And I did that, and Nick had set up his station with his modular synthesizers and this weird tactile control unit for it, where you just like kind of, you rub your hands on it and it makes these amazing noises. And so we jammed, him and I, and we just did that. And yes, there was a lot of laughing, like, and just like, that thing when you feel like it doesn't matter if you're, you know, 11 or 40. It's like you play it back, and like, that's super cool. Like, that's the, when you get that reaction, it's like, it's amazing to get to have that. So, but then also we've both done this for a long time. Nick and the people around him there is setting up or building the studio, Betty's. Many times we walked into studios and it's just like, I can't do anything here because it's so uninspiring. The environment, and then how they built the studio that sounds amazing, has like the perfect gear, but also has the windows so you can see the woods. And the actual important stuff, like the light in there and the colors and the smell from like the wood they used to build, like that. And me and Nick are almost exactly the same age. He had his birthday a couple of weeks ago. So it just feels like both, we're a really good match. We're in really good places in life. And yeah.
Are you worried about turning 40?
No. That's what I said before, like the society is designed for me to be 40. So I'm not, my life has constantly gotten better and better. So I'm better at handling life, I guess. Yeah.
You have this lovely post. You made this lovely post, I think it was last summer, about Tim Showalter of Strand of Oaks, just sort of talking about your friendship together, and it made me want to know more about what friendship means to you. Like, you seem to take it pretty seriously, but especially since you've been able to record with this band after that intense isolation we all experienced. Mm-hmm. How have your friendships changed since then?
Well, I'm trying to get better at communication and checking in and to let people know how grateful I am for them. I'm still light years away from where I want to be in terms of communication. But I have a lot of friends like that, like me and Tim. It can go like months in between talking, and then we get on the phone and talk for hours. So it's just it's something that is it's a very, you know, it's the act, the treasure of getting to live this life and meeting a lot of people, and then you know, meet a lot of people that I love. But sometimes you meet the people that just becomes your, like, because we had, me and Tim Showalter, we toured together a lot, and he opened up on my tours in 2012 and 13, and I was in a time in my life, and you know, I really needed a friend, and so did he. And we, you know, times on the tour bus, just like getting up in the morning and having a coffee and talk about that is probably, I will remember more than playing like the Royal Albert Hall in London. And I'm not just saying that. That is like the thing I actually carry with me. And so I'm not there. I'm trying to be a better friend. But it was a big reminder of letting people know how grateful I am for them. And yeah, it's also have the luxury of people on my crew that I've been working with for a long time, and making sure that they are being felt like they're appreciated, and how I can make their jobs easier. But like my front of house, my sound engineer Dan, I've known you, I think we first became friends when we were 10 years old. So, and Etienne, my tour manager, it's probably coming up on 15 years. So
wow.
Close friends in my, because those are people where we can work professionally together with and all that comes with that, but we have each other's backs, you know.
Before I let you go, will you do the lightning round?
Sure.
All right. You are going to love it. Okay,
yes.
Christian Mattson, what is a song that makes you cry every time?
Both Sides Now, Joni Mitchell.
Oof. Okay, do you like dogs or cats or maybe something else?
All the, like, most animals. I can't. I am. They seem. I'm Snow White. They come to me.
I call my mom Snow White.
Oh wow!
Just like my mom. Yeah. What is your least favorite household chore?
Ooh, probably vacuuming.
What is your favorite type of musical horn?
French.
What is your most useful non-musical skill?
Cooking, probably.
What is your favorite type of bird?
Ooh, the curlew.
The curler.
Curlew. Okay. C-U-R-L-E-W. Curlew. E-W.
Okay. Who is your favorite banjo player?
Ooh. That's tough. Because it's just like, it's not Roscoe Holcomb because it just sounds like, no. It's probably, it's just like to pick your favorite dish, like your food. No, I can't.
The answer is Kermit the Frog. Okay, next question. I'm just kidding.
No, it's your Steve Martin.
Steve Martin's good?
No, I'm just saying that. I've there's so many different styles, and there's so many like I'm more passionate about. But probably, what is Romero? What is his first name? He also builds banjos.
Ferris and Jason Romero.
Yes, Jason Romero. That's my favorite banjo player in the world.
That's a good one. Do you still have your recording device with you?
Right here.
Oh, that's excellent. Okay. This is the last question. Where is the most beautiful place you've ever visited?
I mean, it's the mountains outside of Abisko in Sweden. The northernmost of Sweden.
All right. Oh, that sounds good. Okay, it's time to wrap up the interview. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by John Nungesser. Alex Stanton composes our music. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes there. You can search for us on the SiriusXM app under Basic Folk. You can check out our website, basicfolk.com, or find us wherever you get podcasts. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. So great. Okay, we'll talk to you next time. Bye.